Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this Monday edition, North Korea continues to threaten the U.S. and really the world, I guess. Massive cyber attack, that hit the whole world. Also, we have a note for Mother's Day, which was yesterday. And Germany, a country that isn't understood by even Germans. Interesting story sent in by a listener. That and plenty more coming up on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live here at 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. Also, email comments at kpcg.fm. Appreciate those. We got an interesting story sent to us that we're going to talk about later on as well. So you can send those if you'd like to comments at kpcg.fm. We like taking a look at those. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondo here today. Sunday was Mother's Day, and we were discussing what we did, and some things were mother-related, other things were not mother-related. Abraham was digging dirt, which I guess, unless your mom wants you to do it, it's just kind of a random thing.
Yeah, well, I guess because my mother's in Canada, I went to my mother-in-law's house and then to my grandma-in-law, if that's
Is that an appropriate title.
Yeah. But anyway, they need some yard work done, so we went into that for them because I guess that's what they needed. So, but yeah, it's the first Mother's Day I did manual labor on, but it was fun though.
The first of many.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Grant went to a Dodgers game, OKC Dodgers.
Without my mom.
Yeah.
So that was the weird part about that.
Sometimes the best gift you can give is space.
Give you a little bit of room.
My dad and brother and wife came with me, but, my sisters hijacked my mom at that time and took her shopping, which obviously the rest of us could not handle.
Yeah. Well, it's about, you know, what do you want to do that day? And sometimes it might be work-related. Sometimes it might be shopping-related. And so, yeah, hopefully everyone had a nice Mother's Day. We had a nice day here locally. It was pretty warm, decent weather. And so we had a good day all around. Lots of things happening in the news to touch on briefly. This one's from Fox News. North Korea, they don't slow down for Mother's Day. They don't give the world a break. They keep launching missiles. North Korea says Russia reportedly ready to play constructive role in addressing Pyongyang threat. The United States asked Russia to be a part of an international effort to address North Korea's nuclear threat, according to a State Department official. That's something. I mean, Russia really is being kind of given this top billing, right? I mean, you think about Syria. They were going to go in there and negotiate, which I don't think that worked out very well. And now they're going to go in and they're going to negotiate with North Korea? I don't think that's a good idea.
And it just sounds like America is yawning and flicking those responsibilities on to Russia a lot of the time, which is just really a stunning decision on their part for us to just think that Russia is going to do anything in any of those scenarios that would conform to American interests at all?
Yeah, Russia's not—they're not our buddies. They have their own worldview and their own interests. So, but Vladimir Putin really is. I mean, in some ways, he's being looked at like the most important man on earth. It seems like, because he's stepping into all these situations.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that it's very clear that America acting on their own can't fix it, short of a military intervention in North Korea, I think, and other places in the world. And so I think they're using the strategy of using someone else's ally to put pressure on them. So North Korea is allied with, well, traditionally with the USSR, Russia, China, any anti-American countries. And America's done this many times, is ally with one of their allies and try to put pressure on them to end what they're doing. It never works out because your enemy ally, your frenemy, if I can call them that.
Yes.
Your frenemy wants something in return, and usually it's something that's you don't want to give up. So it's I think it's just a kind of a desperate measure, because short of military intervention to stop North Korea, because what else is America going to do?
This write-up from Fox says that reports from South Korea claim that Russian President Vladimir Putin recently told the inaugurated South Korean president that he is ready to play a constructive role in addressing the North Korean threat. It is unclear what Putin considers constructive and whether that involves coordinating with the United States. I was trying to think, maybe you guys know off the top of your head, when's the last time Russia got involved in something and it worked out for peace? World War II? No
the Olympics?
I mean, and even, of course, World War II, at the end of that, you have the Cold War. So it wasn't, it was peaceful in a sense that we weren't in World War anymore, but there was still this ongoing potential conflict. So obviously, recently, Syria is the one that comes to mind. They were going to negotiate the getting rid of all the chemical weapons, but they still apparently have them because they just used them recently. And so I can't think of a situation where Russia has stepped in and things have been fine. They're always going to play it to their advantage, right?
And when he talks about words like constructive, what does he mean by that? Is it constructive in America's interests? When he talks about a threat, does he really consider a threat the same way we would? It's not like North Korea is going to turn their weapons on Russia. So would he even consider them much of a threat?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think the last time Russia did something to help general world peace was all the way back in 1815 when they helped defeat Napoleon. So you have to go back to the pre-communist revolution days to find a period when that's going back over 200 years to find a time when Russia was allied with the West and they did create a peace in Europe for a long time. Until the Crimean War, which we fought against Russia in the 1850s. So, well, at least Britain did. You have to go back to the pre-communist days. So as a communist state now, they're fundamentally embracing an ideology that that undermines capitalism, America, everything we stand for. So it's never going to happen unless Russia changes too. That's kind of, as you pointed out with all the situations, that's kind of the lesson from history.
And Vladimir Putin definitely is being looked at as a pretty important figure. There's a lot of thetrumpet.com about him written up. You might be surprised if you haven't paid much attention to him lately as to some of the things that he's involved in and will be involved in. So you can find more about that at The Trumpet.
Yeah, well, and just one last note. The Soviet Union, Russia, is the reason why they even have nuclear weapons. It was Stalin and Khrushchev who gave North Korea the money, the technology, and the uranium to make nuclear weapons during the Cold War. So China's helps North Korea, but Russia's the one who gave them made the problem in the first place. So
right.
It's if anyone should deal with it, it should be Russia because it's their fault. But they're not going to deal with it the way we would want to if they do anything.
Yeah, and there's another headline today where Putin came out and said that the world should stop trying to intimidate North Korea. So I don't. You know, apparently, he comes across like he's on their side in this, and he wants to step in and have some sort of helping hand. I don't think that would work out well for the West. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there with him. We talked on, I think it was on Friday, about this mysterious giant creature in Indonesia that washed ashore. They think they've identified it, and they don't think it's a sea monster after all. They think it's a baleen whale, I believe, if that's how you say it. It still looks like a monster to me. I don't care if it has a name. That thing was huge and disgusting.
Yeah. Well, it was decomposing, yeah. So it looks zombie-ish.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look normal. But they probably thought it was a whale. But still, yeah, if you weren't a marine biologist or something like that, you would just think it was some kind of deep-sea creature that's from, like, the dinosaur days or something.
Well, it is a mysterious giant creature. It's just one we happen to have a name for.
Yeah.
It's still a big old thing. It comes from under the water.
I actually saw a picture of that, and I couldn't tell what was the body of the animal or if there was maybe a part of land sticking out of the water that was also there, because all of it was that all the body? Or was
I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge, and it was, like you said, decomposing. And Look, actually, in the face, looked like an elephant.
Yeah,
because of the tusks, and it almost it looked like a tusk.
That's what threw me off. I thought that was land sticking out of the water. I couldn't tell what was what anymore.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Anyway, it was. They think that's what it is. So they're but there are some creepy things out there still. So. Interesting. You never know what's going to wash ashore, I guess, if you're by. We went to one of the local lakes yesterday briefly. Nothing washed ashore there that I saw. I asked my kids, I said, how many sharks do you think are in there? They're like, probably a few. I'm like, no, there's no sharks. It's a man-made lake.
Probably a few.
Unless somebody chucked one in. There's nothing in there. Maybe a snake.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, it's scary what you just find in your backyard sometimes because people let go their pets they don't want anymore and they shouldn't because they're not local or naturalized. And yeah, sometimes they're pretty scary, like snakes and other things.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have a couple of the entrances here to the campus here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. We have a gate and then there's a box you can punch in a code where it'll close usually after hours. And then, so if you need to get on the campus, you know, real early or something, you need to punch your code in. And that's always an interesting thing in the summer. There's different creatures that are living by the key box. Spiders and moths and all kinds of strange things. You gotta stick your hand out there, but be careful. Stuff might get bitten.
Yeah, yesterday I was trying to get inside my house. I went and bought some tater tots for breakfast. Treat my wife.
Nice.
And
that's too much information, but thank you.
Sorry. It's not really relevant to the story. But anyway, I was trying to get into the house, and there's this weird-looking spider right near the doorknob where I had to put the key in. So I was trying to kill it. I kept punching the door, but I kept moving right before my hand hit it. Like, it was just mocking me. And then, but every time it moved away, when I was putting the key in, it would move back to the doorknob.
Wow.
So I'm like, what is going on? So anyway, I just did it anyway, and I was able to get it a little later on. He managed to get inside the house. He was so deceptive.
Meanwhile, the neighbors are watching some guy punch the door.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my wife, I'm surprised she didn't think someone's trying to break in, because I'm just trying to get this spider.
Yeah, I don't know too many guys. Well, maybe a lot of people do this. I would never think of punching a spider to death. I would just probably kick it with my shoe or something.
Yeah.
But you're going for the punch. Yeah. Kill shot.
Yeah, I'm going for the, I want a reputation with the spiders. So.
You wanted the word to spread around the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't mess. Queensberry rules. So.
Don't mess with Abe. He'll punch you.
We've actually gained a pet spider recently that must have crawled in the house when Anya leaves the door open. She likes to let fresh air go through sometimes. And then she's telling me to kill the spider. I'm saying, well, you're the one letting the spider in, so maybe we should just keep the doors closed, because that's what I prefer too.
Charlotte's Web.
So we've just been seeing it in different parts of the house. It's always on the roof or something. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's a little high. I don't want to get up there and kill it. So we've just been letting it survive recently.
Well, some people do have pet spiders, typically tarantulas and things. And we have a lot of tarantulas around here. I've seen them walking across the road and different things like that. They're actually not bad spiders. They're just kind of scary because they're so big, but they're not the real. You got to watch out for the brown recluse.
Yeah.
Those are the nasty ones. One of the big things that happened over the weekend, I guess it was Friday, was the cyber attack. It was a huge one. It's from Fox News. More victims expected in unprecedented cyber attack as users log in on Monday. So some people coming back to work today going to log in and see if they have been overtaken by this ransomware. As I understand it, if you click on the attachment or somebody within the network does, it opens this ransomware that runs and basically takes your files, and you got to pay them, and then they'll give you your files back. One way to beat that is by backing up your data on another, you know, place, so it doesn't matter. But for those who don't, you have to pay the piper, I guess. And so this was a huge deal. They say $38,000 has already been paid by different people to try to get their data back.
Man, it's just a terrible virus. And it's not one that you can remove from your computer or something. I mean, you can, but you lose something from it, I guess. And so it is a pretty bad one. I did see part of it where I didn't read the whole story, but how the U.S., the NSA helped create it, or they were developing something like it. And so they're warning people against the monster they helped create in a way.
Yeah, Russia blames the U.S., per usual. The attack hit at least 100,000 organizations in 150 countries. spread to thousands more computers Monday as people returned to work and logged on in for the first time since a massive online assault began. You don't want to be that guy in the office that that accidentally opened it, you know?
Yeah.
Trace it back to you. Bob! Well, I thought it was a birthday card or whatever. So that does happen, but it does highlight, I guess, just how vulnerable everyone is. I mean, if you lose data that you need, I mean, they were talking about hospitals having problems, emergency rooms in some countries. There's all sorts of things that we rely on every day that if somebody gets a hold of it and shuts it down, we're kind of lost.
Yeah, it's also it's pretty interesting. I'm wondering how many people actually have data that is that interesting on their computer. I can't think of anything. Maybe like internet passwords. That might be something. Maybe like a bank account password would be a risk. But even if they gave that back, they would still be able to know the password, right? They would still have some of that information. So I don't really know how that would affect most people.
Yeah, I'm not sure about all the ins and outs of it, but I did think that too. I'm like, I could let some of my files go.
I have some pictures. That's about it.
But, you know, businesses, you know, if they're not backed up, then it's a lot they would need. So pretty interesting news there with that event, and I would imagine there'll be more of those as time goes on. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Kia David program coming up in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. And also stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story, the MS-13 gang is a national threat. A string of murders on Long Island exposes the growing threat of drug cartels and street gangs, and they're particularly a bad gang at that. Not that there's any good gangs out there, but they're particularly vicious. Related to that, Land of the Free, home of the 33,000 violent street gangs. It's by Jeremiah Jacques. That's also at thetrumpet.com. Check that out today. Grant, you've got an interesting write-up here about Mother's Day from kansas.com. It's interesting that states can have a website. Happy Mother's Day, Mom, it says. Let me tell you a story.
Yeah, I guess this is a newspaper called the Wichita Eagle, but they bought the domain kansas.com, which is pretty smart.
Sure.
It's a local paper, but it has the domain name of an entire state in there.
Yeah. I was like, is this the website of the state?
It's
like,
pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy wrote a letter to his mother. Apparently, she'd been through a lot of tragedy. Her mother died when she was age two. When his mom was age two, her mom died.
Right.
And then her dad died when she was just age eight. So she'd been through a lot of tragedy. And then, of course, she was raised by aunts and grandparents who never really understood how much a young girl would need to be loved and hugged and things like that. So she was able to pass that on to her kids, and also just passing on the ability to read. And he's saying, I owe her probably almost $2 million, which is what I've made in my career as a journalist, because she was the one who developed the love for reading in me, which then helped me learn how to write well as well.
Yeah, I think it seems like people that really like to read and enjoy it and are good at it, you start obviously very young, and somebody reads to you and takes the time to go through things with you. And I mean, we're all in that situation, I guess, where we can look back and think, well, we've been taught a lot of things by a lot of different people over mm-hmm. the years, and that's the cycle of life. If you didn't have somebody teaching you, how would you learn?
Right.
You know, things that we take for granted today.
Yeah, he made a good point about how parents make their children employable or not by teaching them certain traits, certain work ethic and accountability and reliability, things like that. And he said his mother did a really good job. He kind of pokes his dad a little bit, which I didn't like as much, but his dad called him pretty much the dumbest farm boy he'd ever seen, because they're out on the farm and all he was doing was reading books.
Oh.
He wasn't helping on the farm, so he was kind of dumb when it came to the hard work.
Right.
So he probably could have stood to work a little harder himself, but at least he was learning a skill that was able to last him his whole life.
Well, sometimes kids grow up in an environment where whatever job is in front of them is pretty hard. Like farm work can be pretty hard. And sometimes it's actually a great thing just because they say, I don't want to do this.
Right.
And so they really work hard at something else, realizing that, you know, if you want to go a different direction, you have to work at it. It's not just going to be handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you see another side of life, that just gives you more motivation.
Yeah, that's something we're probably all thankful for, is just even when you look at dad and mom any of us, they both have very different skills and tendencies that we all end up taking from our parents in a certain way. My dad always is working in the garden, and he actually offers my younger brother minimum wage to help him out there, which is a pretty cool deal. And then, of course, my mom's the one taking him to all his baseball games. So both of them are contributing interesting aspects to the child's life. And by having both of them, it really does make for a complete childhood.
Yeah, for sure. And unfortunately, not a lot. Well, not as many people have that as they used to. But there are cases, even like this guy's talking about, where his mom years ago had, there were some tragedies there where she didn't have the mother and father she needed. Sometimes, you know, that starts a bad cycle. Other times that person really grows up to be an outstanding parent because they realize what they missed and they're trying to instill it in their own kids.
Yeah, she came away from that just far more dedicated to passing along love to her five boys. Could you imagine having five boys? That would be really fun, but really exhausting. And so she taught them all, and they all grew up to be journalists and firemen and parents. Even some of them adopted children as well.
Yeah.
So they ended up having pretty active, successful lives because she was able to turn it around from a pretty tough upbringing herself.
And this fellow that's writing here for Kansas.com, he's a journalist today. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's made almost $2 million in his career, which sounds like a lot, but
over the years, I don't know how old
they,
he is.
They don't give it to you in one lump sum. Yeah, right. Yeah. And so he's pointing back to that education he got early on from his mom and you know, his love for reading and that type of thing, and giving her a little shout out on Mother's Day, I guess.
Right. And speaking of how much he might have owed her, that's not even accounting for all the time where he lived in their home as a dependent. And he's even talking about how they bought books that they couldn't afford. They made some pretty big sacrifices so that all the kids could have a big bookshelf full of books, which was something that his mother learned to love because she was so lonely. She had to learn to love reading, and then she passed on that love of reading to the kids. So a lot of sacrifice there, which is really a lot of what parenting is about. That's kind of like what your entertainment spending goes to after a while, it seems like, is a lot of it goes toward the kids.
Yeah, they want to be entertained often and very often. And
hopefully that makes the parents entertained too.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you do look at like different skills. You know, some are pretty basic, like reading and such, but then developing maybe a musical skill or something like that, unless you yourself are extremely skilled, eventually you're going to have to shell out some bucks to hopefully get them an education in it, but you can see that it's valuable long term. You know, it's a skill that you can use your whole life, and so, but yeah, it's not cheap, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's obviously, a lot of kids are not going to grow up to be professional athletes or musicians, even if they played a team sport or an instrument when they were younger, but the lessons that they learn from that are extremely valuable. It's not like you're always going to make a direct career out of it like this guy did, becoming a journalist after learning to love reading so much, but still learning how to stick with something even if you don't like it. If, for example, you're on a basketball team and you don't even like playing, but at least you learn how to hold up your end of the deal with your team and do your part, that's something that you can apply to work and to family your entire life.
Yeah, that's a great thought, you know, making your children employable.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is.
Right.
And a lot of it just has to do with work ethic, consistently showing up, those basic life skills. Somebody's got to teach you somewhere along the line, mm-hmm. or you're going to have to learn the really, really hard way. And some people just never learn it. And so that's a big problem. That can occur, but for those that are employable, they usually have somebody to thank for that.
That's really true. I mean, just drive down the road and you'll see help wanted signs pretty much on every block in front of most businesses, and yet we always hear that there aren't enough jobs out there. Maybe working at a fast food place would be tough if you already have four or five kids, but there are jobs, and most people are not in such a bad situation as that. It's just a matter of people working hard, and that is really taught from a young age. A lot of those things are taught from a young age, especially with mothers giving that nurturing love and affection. That helps children of both genders really grow up to be more compassionate and caring, and then the fathers give that tougher side as well so that they can withstand adversity. It really does take both, but specifically with Mother's Day, having that that love and that ability to really dream big and go after those things, even if the dad was a little bit more realistic in this situation, saying maybe you should work hard as well.
he really lucked out. Five boys on a farm, that's perfect.
It really
unless
is.
They're just sitting around reading all day. Somebody going to help me do some work done around here?
Yeah, hopefully he was able to make them work sometimes.
they're in there reading. They need to be out there in the fields. Bring the book with you. You can read it during your lunch break or whatever. But that's an interesting write-up. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Let me tell you a story. And at Kansas.com.
So smart.
Yeah. I wish I would have gotten like Russia.com.
That reminds me.
Or whatever they are over there. I don't know. Yeah.
Do you remember when Mr. Trump bought JebBush.com and then it just redirected to Make America Great Again?
No.
Just an epic troll.
That's very savvy. Yeah, there's that funny commercial with John Malkovich where he's trying to get JohnMalkovich.com.
Right.
Somebody else has it. That makes me laugh every time I see it.
He's arguing on the phone with a guy for hours. It's like, why would you just sell it to me?
Yeah. You think that when they log on to John Malkovich, they really want you. That was very well
so
done.
Funny.
Yeah, it's something I guess, you know, you don't think about too much unless you're a business or something. Then you want to get your domain name. Mm-hmm. But, interesting. Anyway, pretty interesting write-up there. Grant, thanks for bringing that to us. A little belated, but... from yesterday's Mother's Day.
Yeah, this guy wrote it yesterday. How dare he?
Yeah, he was working. He should have been doing something else. Calling his mom or
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
All right, thanks. You're listening to Tremper Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. And also, if you'd like to send us comments, stories, ideas, anything like that, you can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turchin, Abraham Blondeau here today. Speaking of people having help wanted signs out, you see panhandlers from time to time on the streets.
Right.
I drove by a guy yesterday. I think he was trying to sell magazines. I've never seen that before. He was holding up some sort of a periodical. He was trying to sell it. I never heard of it before. I don't know where it came from or what it was. But that was interesting. Because at first I thought he was just asking for money, which in effect he was. But he's trying to sell something, so I don't know. Maybe that's a good idea. I wish he wasn't doing it on the street corner, but
right.
Nevertheless.
Yeah, I guess, well, I know that's how people used to sell newspapers and pamphlets. They send out the newspaper boy, and he would run around with it and try to sell it to you. Because kids are always the best salesman, I guess.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
Yeah. So I guess that's an old way of doing it. But, usually standing on a road in Oklahoma where there are no shoulders... and people don't use their blinkers. That's not the best place to trying to be selling your product.
No, there's not a lot of place to just stand back there. Over the last, I don't know, a couple of years, we've heard on and off about some of the pirates, Somalian pirates and so forth. And haven't heard much about it lately, but I guess there's some activity out there, they think. This is from Time Magazine, where pirates still roam the seas. They say incidents of piracy at sea in West Africa almost doubled last year, according to a new report by Oceans Beyond Piracy. Three of the world's piracy hotspots. These are not the friendly pirates from the movies, by the way. Nigeria. The spring of 2016 saw a spike in attacks off Nigeria linked to military activity. There were 18 kidnapping assaults on merchant vessels between March and May, while some 96 sailors were abducted. So if you're sailing through there and you're taking cargo, I mean, there's a real threat you're going to run into pirates. And I guess you'd have to, I don't know what the protocol would be if that happened, but it is happening. Somalia, attacks off the Horn of Africa have decreased since 2011, but there's a warning of a looming resurgence due to decreased vigilance. In March, Somali pirates seized an oil tanker, the first major hijacking there in 5 years. And I think that's probably why we haven't heard as much about it, because it seems like Somalia was the hot spot, and then it did die off a little bit. Lastly, they say Sulu and Celebes Seas, if I said that right. Piracy across Asia fell overall in 2016, but kidnappings rose in the waters between Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines, where the Al-Qaeda-linked group Abu Sayyaf is active. Merchant ships and tourist yachts are now at risk. So I don't think too many of our listeners are going to be sailing the seas out there, but for those that have to for a living, there is a threat of being abducted.
Yeah, these kinds of groups, sometimes they're linked with a terrorist group, because, I mean, that's something terrorists do a lot of, abduct someone for ransom or something like that. But yeah, it's without a military escort or without someone on board the ship, it's actually pretty easy to do. I mean, highly illegal and dangerous if there is a military nearby. But still, it is a problem, and it's you don't expect it to come. And I think when we think of pirates or piracy, we think of people downloading music illegally from the internet and ripping DVDs, and although that's the modern pirate, I guess, most of us deal with. But yeah, in those places, they're still pretty dangerous.
There's another note here about wind power. That's the green energy dream, which if it works, I think it'd be great, but it doesn't seem like they've been able to make it work as well as they'd hope. But they are making some improvements in that way. Wind power on the rise. More than 54 gigawatts of wind power capacity was installed globally in 2016, according to the Global Wind Energy Council, with turbines now in more than 90 countries. They're just so unsightly, though. They just don't look good when they got them all lined up there. But
yeah,
there's a few here in Oklahoma, actually some not too far from here. They say that here's a sample of 10 countries that installed the most capacity last year and how much annual power demand they meet by wind. Number 8 is the Netherlands, the 8th most power generated, 4,328 megawatts, I guess, 8.9% of the total power. Turkey, they have 7.3% of their total power is wind. India, 9.1% of the total power. The U.S., 5.5% of total power, though we put out more power in general, but we have more people in at least in this area they're looking at, and so 5.5%, that's not much. And number one is China in terms of power output, but it's only 4% of the total power that they need. So anyway, makes a little bit of a help, I guess, but it's not like you're getting rid of the other sources anytime soon.
Yeah, I think the main problem with air power is, or wind power, I should say, is that the turbine, like, because the propellers are so massive, the props on them, that the start it takes quite a bit of energy. So you lose some of the power that you gain from it, because it takes so much to even get them started. Also, if there's no wind, then there's no power. So it is dependent on the weather, but also they devalue property. If you live close to it, people don't want to move there because of the sound they make. And the like you mentioned, they don't look very nice. They ruin the scenic landscape. So they also, a lot of people are having problems selling property near them if they decide to put them up. So they do cause this problems for the people living around them. Even though, I mean, it is trying to find better ways of producing energy is a good idea. But I think with wind power, they have to be looking past that, because they take so much space, and they cause problems with the area around them that it's just not worth the cost of it.
It would be kind of funny to advertise, like, say, a vacation spot and say, hey, it's totally green energy. People would love it. They'd come there. It'd be like one cottage surrounded by a bunch of turbines.
Yeah.
Here's the green energy.
Yeah.
That's the loudest, most obnoxious place I've been to. But anyway, yeah, it's not. I mean, years ago, farmers always had windmills. That was common. And it would do a little bit. It could help. And they were always smaller, of course. And, you know, they were kind of actually neat looking, I thought. But now these huge ones. There's some here, of course, in Oklahoma. I've seen quite a few. I've seen them in Wisconsin. I've seen them in California. They're probably almost everywhere. And there is a lot of good wind around here, but again, 5.5% of the energy of the U.S., that's not doing much. Maybe it's not going to power your phone, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
Charge your phone, you know what I mean? It runs on a battery, but you know, charge it.
Have a little miniature propeller on the end of your phone to power it. But I think a neat idea I did see, this green energy, is they're doing this in California, because the ocean has a natural movement to it with the swell. So they put these buoys out there, and the swell of the ocean moving up and down that can produce electricity. And so they have a bunch of these buoys out there, and it actually makes electricity. And all you need to do is just have it out there sitting in the water.
Yeah, they're doing something. It's not the buoy thing, I don't think, but like I think it's over in, I want to say Europe somewhere, where they have like, I forget how they do it, but they have, when the waves come in, it's hitting like this some sort of whatever the device is under the water, and it's moving it and creating right. energy. And I think it's kind of out of the way. I don't know if it's causing any other problems. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess basically anything that has a natural continuous movement to it, you could use it in some capacity.
Yeah, because a turbine just spins in a circle. That's if you get the spin, then that can be used to create electricity. That's what dams do with water. That's what coal does. All those things, you just need to spin, find a way to spin a turbine mm-hmm. around. Then you can produce electricity. And there's a lot of natural ways it's done. It's just not having them in the way or making it consistent, and then also having them big enough where they produce enough electricity. That's the problem.
Somebody could figure it out. They'd be wealthy. That's
yes.
for sure. But you've got, speaking of some technology here, you've got a write-up. This is from GMANetwork.com. Drone camera unlocks secrets of narwhal tusks. The first secret is, what's a narwhal tusk?
Right.
And then what's the secret of it?
Yeah, well, a narwhal or narwhale, they're called the unicorns of the sea, because they're the ones with the big horn coming out of their face. But what it actually is, it's teeth, actually. Their two front teeth grow, and it grows outside of their nose. And then the teeth intertwine and make that tusk. So it looks like a unicorn.
Yeah.
What we would think of what a unicorn
it's
is.
Hard
anyway.
To floss. It's hard to floss that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So people were wondering, well, what's the point of it? I mean, naturally we think they have sword fights with them or something like that. But that's never been the case. However, narwhals are hard to observe because they live in Arctic habitats. And so they're very difficult to observe and see everything they do. But some new drone footage has actually shown a couple different ways they use the tusks. And so that helps us understand why they even have them in the first place.
Yeah, it's fascinating what you can learn from drones, because they're getting places that we couldn't get to.
Yeah.
And it can capture footage, so you can look at some things that we normally wouldn't see. Sometimes that's not a good thing, but other times it is pretty handy, such as this. So what have they discovered from the footage?
Yeah, so there's two things they discovered. The first is their tusks. They don't use them to hack and slash, but they use them like a club, or when they're hunting fish, or when they're when males battle each other, they'll use their tusks to actually hit the fish to immobilize it.
Wow.
And then they'll eat it. And then they also, when they're posturing between the two males, or it's a territorial battle, they won't stab another whale with it, but they'll use it to hit another whale.
Huh.
Much like other animals, if they use their tails or something to, in combat, that's what the narwhal does with its tusk.
So they club the fish.
Yes.
Interesting. That seems like it would be a sort of a like an inconvenient way of doing it. You know, if I thought about how I was going to fish, I don't think I'd go out there with a bat.
Right.
I'd probably just, you know, do something else. But it works for them, apparently. And then it kind of reminds me, well, you see that with a lot of animals, horned animals of some kind. In this case, it's teeth. But, I mean, you know, they bang into each other to see who has the supremacy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bird using its wing to knock someone or something out of the way. But, I mean, narwhals, they can move very quickly underwater. In water, humans are very clumsy and slow. But for these kinds of animals, it's their natural habitat. And so they can move so quickly that it's easy for them to use the tusk to hit something. And so that's what they use it for. And then the second way, I think this is really interesting, and they're on their way to proving this in more detail, but that the tusk, at the very end, it has little pores in it. And these pores takes in a little bit of the water around it, and then it goes up the tusk, and then to some nerve endings in the narwhal, and that allows the narwhal to have a better idea of what the environment is around it. So it allows the narwhal to see what's in the water, kind of like a snake tongue. Its tongue is darting all the time because that's how it tastes the air and the ground, so they have a better awareness of what's around them. And the same thing with the tusk. It's like a sensitivity measure of the water around it, so they can tell what's in the water, and they know better what the environment's like.
Yeah, it's always fascinating. I wouldn't have thought of that for that particular animal. Snakes, obviously, we know they do that. But yeah, I find that very fascinating, you know, just because I don't want to... I can't do that, and also I don't want to determine what's going on by my tongue.
Yeah.
Unless it's food that I'm eating. Beyond that.
Well, exactly. I mean, for us, it's we don't use our teeth to fight each other, except maybe Mike Tyson. But
that's a good callback to the Evander Holyfield fight. Yeah.
But yeah, these for a tusk that with a narwhal, we would never think that's like it's a very sensitive detection, natural detection device on the narwhal that helps it figure out the salinity and if there's blood in the water or exactly what's around there. And so I think that's a pretty ingenious tool where they have an advantage because it's up to 9 feet long.
Yeah.
So they have a idea of what's going on ahead of them, except the tusk, it's their teeth. So it's actually very sensitive. It's not a bone. Well, teeth are bone, but it's not just a bone. It has nerve endings. And so when they use it to fight or depending what's in the water, it's actually very sensitive. They can actually hurt themselves if they use it too much.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And that's all found out because of drone footage. Drone camera unlocks secrets of narwhal tusks. And so that's pretty interesting. I didn't know much about them at all. And then I didn't know about that information either. So it is cool when they can go in and look at some natural environments that we normally can't get to. And I suppose with a drone, I don't know, the animals might be somewhat thrown off, but probably not the same as if it was a human there.
Yeah.
And again, how would you get there to some of these places without a drone? So that is one of those neat uses of it. A couple of notes before we get to your final story today. They're YouTubers. There's these two people on YouTube. I guess they make a living off of it. They lost access to their kids. Mike and Heather Martin, they created a YouTube channel where they basically pranked their children all of the time. You may have heard of that, and made the videos. And so it was ruled that was inappropriate because I've never seen anything about it, but I guess the pranks were a little intense for the kids. And so they lost custody of that, which I don't know how that'll all resolve, but it doesn't seem like it's a good idea to make videos like that.
Yeah, I think... whenever you document something with footage, it's easy for, especially if when you're trying to get views, you want to get more sensationalistic and go more extreme. And so eventually it goes too far, especially anything with children. That's always just a sensitive issue. So, I mean, I'm sure they weren't trying to do anything wrong, but you can get a lot of money from YouTube if you're a popular channel. It's just never a good idea to put up, I think, personal information up there because it's you can just get ripped apart or sued or who knows what can.
Well, and it's exploiting the kids in a lot of ways probably. And also just I'm always amazed sometimes people will videotape certain things and put it online.
Yeah.
When it's like if anybody sees that, you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Sometimes people will do very illegal things. And they post it online. Or whether it's a video or whether it's a picture. I mean, that's been in the news many times where somebody steals something and then they take a picture of themselves with the stolen item and brag about it, and they can track where you are, and then they get arrested immediately. Obviously, they weren't the smartest people in the world. But, you know, you're doing something illegal and then bragging about it to the world that can cause trouble. Don't know exactly what they did with the kids here, but it was enough to make them... not have custody for a while. One other note here also, healthy school lunches at risk. They've been at risk for a long time. I don't know when the last time these people ate lunch at school, but it's not great. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says he will roll back part of a healthy school lunch initiative started by former First Lady Michelle Obama. She was pretty mad about this. Restrictions on salt will be weakened. And schools in certain states will be allowed to serve fewer whole grains. I don't think that's got anything to do with it. Salt and whole grains.
Yeah.
The sugar, man. It's the sugar they're dumping on them. I'm sure there's something to be said here, but from what I could see from some of the stories about what the school lunch initiative was, I don't think it was going to help anybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the problem is people get smart and they put other places around the school. Like you have convenience stores, little pizzerias usually, and kids just go there for lunch if it's healthy and they just get whatever they want. And
yeah.
Even when I was in school, I was brought a lunch with me. I don't know if that was considered cool or not with my purple lunch bag, but nonetheless, it was better than what the kids were eating. There are only two options, greasy pizza or nachos. And the nachos were that orange plastic cheese and basically cardboard tortilla chips.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the kids eat 5 days a week. I mean.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it just was a really odd
system. Yeah, we had three options, I think. There was like whatever was on the menu that day. Then there was always pizza. You could always get pizza. And then I think you could get some sort of other fast food-ish item, if I recall correctly. Then there were vending machines. You can buy whatever you want on the vending machines. And then once you got to be a freshman, yeah, everybody just left.
Yeah.
No one's going to stick around the cafeteria. And they put all the places right around there, you know, Pizza Hut, Subway, McDonald's, obviously. And McDonald's always would run specials for the kids because you know, a 2-for-1 quarter pounders, whatever it was at the time. And then you go there and the football players are eating like 400 of them before the game, and give or take. And so, yeah, people took off. I mean, especially, and that's what the kids wanted anyway. I'm not saying it's good, but it's what they wanted. So even if you rolled out some really healthy initiative, they wouldn't eat it. They'd go somewhere else probably.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to what they eat at home. One meal a day isn't going to change your health. It's really a lifestyle choice. And quickly, I just have a really funny McDonald's story. When my dad was in the Army, he came back to London, Ontario, where he was based, and went to McDonald's. He was having a burger. And when he was eating by himself there, he looked up, and there's this homeless guy, like, just staring at him through the window, like, just watching him eat. Uh-huh. So they just stared at each other for a second. The homeless guy took off, then my dad took off chasing him. And the homeless guy thought he was going to beat him up or something. But when my dad caught him, he took his hand. Then he took all the change money that was in his pocket, gave it to the homeless guy. Then he went back and finished his meal. But he just gave him the money he had because the guy was hungry. Yeah. He was just hanging around the McDonald's. But anyway, it just cracks me up that they were just staring at each other. Then they started chasing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it had a happy ending because I was like, what's going to happen here? Yeah. Why is he chasing him? Did he steal his coat or something? Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess it would be hard to convey that you wanted to do something good. You know, come here. Yeah. I want to give you money. But that does happen. You've got one other story for us today. This one was actually sent in by a listener. We appreciate that, from comments at kpcg.fm. And it's a link to a write-up at conservativehome.com. The title of the article is Germany, a Country Even the Germans Do Not Understand.
Yeah, this is actually a book review. I think the book is The Shortest History of Germany by James Haws. I think Haues. I'm not sure pronounce his name. So right. Sorry if I butchered it, but it's a book review, and he brings up a really good point, just how German history is probably the most complex and difficult subject to understand because it's a very old country, and a lot of very significant events happened in Germany, but they're all. They're all interconnected, but they're all very different. And so how do you explain it, and how do you simplify it? Because it is, if you don't study it intensely, it's easy to miss important details. And so I'm actually reading another book that goes through German history, and it's documenting all the different times people tried to explain Germany and what they got right and what they got wrong from this historian's perspective. And it is really interesting because... with Germany, the problem is how do you explain a country that is a center of science and music and fine culture in Europe for centuries? And then you have the Nazis. And then now you have what the European Union today. And they were divided, now they're united. And they were Catholic, and now they're half Catholic, half Protestant. How do you explain all these different dichotomies inside the nation.
Yeah.
Because it's a nation constantly at war with itself, but yet it's still very powerful.
Yeah, and a lot of their thinking impacts many nations, impacts the West today. Like even the way they went about studying the Bible very much affects a lot of the religious movements in the U.S. today. I've been reading a book about that, and a lot of that foundational thinking and education, whether it be secular or religious, comes from the German thinkers.
Yeah, exactly. German rationalism is the basis of our modern education system in the United States. The Reformation took place in Germany with Martin Luther. So the Protestant movement, which is most of the religions in America and Britain today, Christian religions, came from Germany. So they're at the very heart of Western civilization. But how do you explain it? Well, how do you explain it simply enough for people to understand it without getting into all these niche subjects?
Yeah, because you've really seen the extremes. You've seen sort of the best and the worst, haven't you?
Yeah,
within
exactly.
That nation.
Yeah, and how do you understand that history without blaming the people today or have like a normal view of them? And so his points he makes are... most German historians focus along the Third Reich, and they spent too much time there, and they neglect other parts of German history to help you explain or understand how it happened, what Prussia is. A lot of people demonize Prussia, blame Prussia for its problems when there's a lot more things going on. In this particular book, The Shortest History of Germany, he says the first 70 pages are very good, but after that, he blames Protestants and Prussians for all the problems that have happened in Germany since. And that's a very unfair assessment, I think. Now, a lot of people have blamed with what happened in Germany, especially during the Third Reich. It's, and I'm not going to point the finger at anyone, but it's very, it's easy to fall into a trap where you just blame one group of people for what happened with Nazi Germany and to explain why Germany is. And I think for my personal study with it and what other people have written about it, I think the best way to understand German history is the only way you can understand why the most cultured nation in the world was also the most savage during World War II, is that you can't explain it just with physical forces. The only way you can understand is with there's another spiritual force at play there that changed everything, and that's even with a lot of a quote that's used quite often is Hitler talking about the magic interpretation of the will, and a lot of what Hitler wrote it's a very spiritual message. It's not just about physical things; it's about the mind and religion and all that's all mixed in there, and so I think that's why. Historians struggle to explain Germany is that if you just try to do it with physical history, you always come up short because there's something else that was driving events, especially in World War II. And there are very few places where you can learn about what that was.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. I wonder, because if you look at some of the educational movements like German rationalism, even their study of the Bible, which was, I think it was called the High Criticism of the Bible, to where they just were looking at very specific, like, proofs, like archaeology, dates, things like that. And I wonder if they sort of ignore the fact that there could be another element, a spiritual element in it, that would make them maybe susceptible in some way to that. But again, that doesn't even totally... Because even though people do think that way, then you do have people like you say, like Hitler, who did write a lot about spiritual things. So it's sort of an interesting mix.
Yeah, it's not monocausal. You can't point to one thing like, yes, that's why that explains everything. It's just a mixture of a bunch of different complex ideas. But one thing that helped me understand Germany better, for a person who hasn't lived there, haven't been there, but who reads about it and tries to understand it, is that in German culture, they view culture and civilization as two separate things. So for us, our culture is what we do, what we write, what our government, like the Constitution of the United States, that's all part of our culture. In Germany, they separate culture and civilization, where civilization is government and politics. Culture is your own personal achievements, what you can do, what you achieve, your profession, and your religion. So those are separated from each other. So an artist is culture. They're not politics. In America and Britain, they're usually combined, where a philosopher comments on politics, or they're a famous musician comments on politics, a very political message.
Or in the U.S., everybody comments on politics.
Yes. Yeah. But they're kind of interconnected. The music and art build up who we are. In Germany, they keep that separate from their government. And so, at least back in the 1800s and World War II time, if you're a scientist, if you're a artist, if you're a composer, you're not meant to comment on politics, because you need to stay in your sphere and not in the other. And so that helps me understand how Germans think about all these things. How someone who loves Handel, who loves Mozart, can have a pretty extreme political view, because they don't view that culture as affecting their politics.
Hmm.
Where for us, it's all kind of intermixed into one mass.
Right. Yeah, really interesting. There's of course a lot to think about there. That's an interesting write-up. Germany, a country even the Germans did not understand. Bit of a book review there. conservativehome.com sent in at comments at kpcg.fm. So we appreciate that, and really an interesting topic to think about a little bit. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live, this Monday edition. Thanks for spending some time with us. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Hope your week's getting off to a great start, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.